Hello and welcome to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. Thank you for joining me today. It is 10 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, June 4th, 2024. Happy June. June is a month where a lot of stuff, at least this year, a lot of stuff is happening for me. And it's that transition month, you know, from spring into summer. So school is out, you know, it's like May, part of May, school's in, then school's out. But now it's kind of June is sort of a settling in, I think, kind of month into summer and here anyway, warmer weather and among other things. And talking about warmer weather, quick gardening update, very quick. All of the flower beds are complete for now, until I wait to see what happens. They've all been sown with wildflower seeds, ground cover, and yesterday morning I put a few morning glory seeds out just to see what would happen. I love morning glories. I just love them. I just don't know if they're going to grow where I plant them, but we'll see. And that's kind of, you know, in planting the seeds rather than putting out flowers, it's, how can I say this? Like it's easier to just see what happens, you know. Like certainly I hope that they all, you know, sprout and grow, and I have my, you know, what I hope to have by the time they do. But the thing is, if they don't, they don't. You know, if they grow in one place and not another, well, then I can see if maybe something else would grow there, or I can just wait and have that space and go from there. So it's really a neat, there's a different flow. And, you know, I have to say, I'm watching the beds and those little sprouts like a hawk, but it's exciting and it's so much fun. What I realize most about it, the biggest blessing about it, is that I really have the space in my space, my personal space, to garden. You know, it used to just be a burden, something I got to go pull those weeds. Man, I got to get that taken care of. I got to have somebody come and, you know, spray the bushes or something. It was a to-do. I had to do this. So it was a demand, you know, a burden and a demand. But now I have the attention to give it, and I can actually tend it and enjoy doing so. And I don't really know what I'm doing. It's a big experiment, but then so's life, right? So, you know, I don't know what I'm doing, but I can learn, and I will learn. So that's one cool thing that's happening in June, just kind of that constant action and seeing how that all washes out. But I realized, honestly, a few days ago, like the last day of May, that my little Geminis, my grandchildren, Bodie and Maisie, their birthdays are next week. And it's like, you know, I knew that, but all of a sudden it's like, here it is. Bodie will be 4 and Maisie will be 3, which is hard to believe. But I asked for suggestions for birthday presents because, you know, those kids, I always get the same response back from Kristen, my daughter-in-law. They need nothing. And it's like, I know they need nothing. So now I preface my request for suggestions with, I know they don't need anything, but I have to give them a birthday present. I'm doing that for me, probably more than them. But Jared wrote back and said that neither of them have a bike helmet that's theirs. And I know that because I saw a picture of Bodie recently wearing Quinn's pink unicorn helmet. So I thought that was a perfect suggestion. Not that he cares. I mean, I'm sure he was happy in her pink unicorn helmet. No, you know, but it's not his. And that was Jared's point, you know, and it was something that now he's, when I was there, he was riding a two-wheeler with training wheels, just learning. And that was one weekend. And when I got back, the next weekend, Jared sent me another little video of him. The first weekend, it was all he could do to focus on pushing, you know, pushing the pedals and keeping the bike going. So having his focus there, he wasn't focused on steering, but they have a big parking lot and play area at the school across the street. So, you know, that was a perfect place to practice riding a bike, which is where Quinn learned how to ride her bike. But anyway, in the second little video, here he is pedaling down the street, and he says to dad, he goes, "Daddy, I'm going to go this way," and turns the bike and goes. So, I mean, it took him no time, but he needs a helmet. So he needs a helmet, and I'm sure Maisie's probably riding along with somebody or doing something. Who knows? That girl is, she could be riding her own bike. She's, fearless. Fearless. Yeah. Among many other things, she's bold and fearless. So I got Bo a dinosaur helmet and Maisie a princess helmet. So they'll each have their own helmet, and I think they'll be happy with them, especially Bo, because his looks like a dinosaur is eating his head. It's this crazy looking green, half a dinosaur head. So when the helmet is on, like the teeth are the front bottom of the helmet. And so I think he'll get a big kick out of that. He loves dinosaurs. But that feels good. And I sent him, and I told him, please just open them as soon, don't wait for their birthdays. Their birthdays are the 11th and 14th. But they don't need to wait. Just let them have them and have fun. But anyway, those are my little updates. But I am very happy to be with you today. Thank you for listening. If you are listening live, just join us in the chat room. Go to 12radio.com and click chat. I invite your comments and questions about today's topic, and I'll respond to them after the show. You can, if you want a reading from me, find me on 12listen every day. I'm typically available mid to later morning, Pacific time into the evening. If you stop by and don't see me, or if I'm busy, just schedule a call or put in a callback request. I'll be notified via text and will respond as soon as I can. I'll do my best to meet your schedule, always. I will always try to meet your schedule. We have reduced rates at 12listen a few times a week. We typically celebrate Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. This week, we'll be celebrating the new moon on Thursday. And I will have a new moon time-based session at a great price just for the day. I'll be online about 10 or 10:30 a.m. Pacific time into the evening, and I would love to talk to you. And just the thing about new moons, and this is it's dark, right? So I think that darkness, before the moon is new, it's just dark. And I think that darkness is a part of is or the concern or the fear of that darkness, I should say, is just part of us as human beings on this earth. It's just and it's mass consciousness, universal consciousness, the wonderful emotions to the most not wonderful emotions of every human being, every thought that's ever been here on this planet. From the beginning, are contained in that atmosphere, the psychic sea that we navigate all the time. And if we are sensitive, which I think probably the majority of people who listen to my show probably are sensitive, empathic, we catch that. We catch other people's vibrations. And so what other people react to because of their beliefs, we feel. So, leading up to the new moon, when the moon starts to gather light again, which is a new beginning, it's bright, it brings back hope. It's a metaphor for hope, for a new beginning. The darkness up to then can feel really thick energetically. And we may not even, we may not even know why, but I think it's just part of this human package that we're in. That moon really doesn't have any control over us. Nothing does, because everything that we can see outside of us is a created thing. It's a created thing. The creator of those things is ourself, our soul, our being, our consciousness, the infinite divine self that we are, that which lives us. But we still live in a physical environment that is affected by physical things. So, anyway, the moral of that story is the energy can feel thick. So just have that feeling. Don't fight it. Whatever you resist, is going to push back. So don't fight it. Just have the feelings that you have. Have your feelings so that they can be what they are, messengers. They're telling you how you are reacting, how you are feeling about something in your experience. If you have them, they leave. If you push them away and go, oh, I shouldn't feel this way, come on, buck up, little soldier. Or whatever you say to yourself, that's what I say to me. They're just going to keep proving to you that you feel kind of heavy or whatever the feeling is. So, just know that kind of comes with the package. But that also is an opportunity to look at what you think, what you believe, what's going on around you that you're giving that type of importance to or that type of power to. Everything is for us. Every single thing in every moment is for us and can be used for our growth, our evolution, and our empowerment. So, that's just my spiel on the new moon. It is Thursday. We are celebrating it with reduced prices on calls and chats. So I really would love to talk to you. If you want to be notified of our specials, just go to 12listen.com and sign up for 12 promotions. All you do is leave your email address and then you're notified of everything that's going on. Every special, everything that we're doing. I still have my Welcome Spring 15-minute time-based session that will be available for, I don't know, what about less than 20 more days, and then we'll move into summer. The other thing that I like to remind you of every week, two more things. One is the gratitude board on 12listen.com, which is a great tool. I mean, you just post what you're grateful for. You can post anonymously, and it's moderated by the 12listen advisors, which means we add our attention to your intention. And that is empowering. It's agreement, and agreement is powerful. And it's just another way for us to support you. Again, whether what you're posting you're grateful for is in your experience or not, let us help you. Why not? I also want to thank you again for listening, however and whenever you do. 12 Radio is a great way to stay inspired and informed. You can find archives of all of the shows in the on-demand section at 12radio.com. So you can grab one anytime you've got some space in your space to listen. I just want to say thanks to Jay for producing my show today and for all he does for us on 12 Radio, which is a lot. So thank you, Jay, and pardon my voice. Let's shift into the teaching segment by listening to a song by Zingaya called In the Between. This is from the Souls on Earth CD and Sequoia Records, so enjoy it, and I'll be back right after. You're listening to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. Thank you for joining me today. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that music. I haven't listened to Zingaya in a long time, and they have some great stuff. So I want to start this segment with a couple of experiences I had last week of just, I mean, blatant experiences of supply, what I needed, when I needed it, showing up, and surrender. You know, they go hand in hand. They're kind of like, you know, power twins. Surrender first and supply comes. The first one I wrote about in my article in this week's Power Peak, called Another Kiss on the Cheek from God. And I promise this is my last reference to gardening, this show. I'm sure you've had enough of it. But when I was talking to you last week, Scott was due to come over that afternoon last Tuesday and finish up, which he did. He finished up what he needed to do with clearing the beds, and then the rest was my work. But he came back Wednesday. He had these giant bags of just bark and limbs and all kinds of stuff, and there were several of them. And he actually rented a truck from Home Depot to haul those off. And he had another couple jobs that he just, you know, he had stuff to haul from them too, so he did it, you know, kind of one fell swoop on Wednesday afternoon. Well, he put him out by the curb, and I kept seeing him out by the curb, and I don't know what happened, but he came, he took him away. He actually had a wheelbarrow right out behind my office, on the patio behind my office, that he had to get out of here. And he did all of that stuff, and neither Gracie or I heard him. He had his a helper with him, because he couldn't have even lifted those bags onto the truck. That's how heavy and big they were. But I don't know if we were in a reading, you know, on a call. I don't know if we were, you know, in a parallel universe. I don't know what. We didn't hear anything. He was like a ninja, you know. Neither of us heard him, and me is more understandable than Gracie not hearing him, because, you know, she's got ears like nobody's business. But so the way I found out is I went out later in the afternoon. He'd come earlier, as I found out. But late in the afternoon, I went out to get the mail and saw that everything was gone. And so I get my mail, and in it was like a folded up piece of paper, a note from the neighbor behind me saying that some of the trees behind my shed were damaging our mutual fence, and he wanted to talk to me about removing them. Well, I mean, honestly, I got my stomach hurt instantly, and I'm thinking, oh no, you know, we're just finishing up really what is the last of a bunch of big projects, and the last thing I want to do is have to replace a fence, or, you know, it just, of course, my head went to worst case scenario, which is happens typical when I'm caught off, typically when I'm caught off guard. But so I went and I looked, and I've got a couple of really giant trees back there, and I'm thinking, if I've got to get rid of those, that could cost a fortune. Well, they're not leaning on the fence. These are just some small trees that grew from saplings, and, you know, and just kind of wove their way through the fence, so to speak. And they were damaging the fence. That was legit. So before I called my neighbor, I wanted to have a solution to offer him. So I called Scott to ask if he would cut the trees down, and he answered the phone right away. And the most amazing thing is that he goes, oh sure, I'll be right over. And I said, okay, when do you think? He goes, I'm at Ace Hardware, which is 2 blocks from my house. He happened to be at Ace Hardware just at the point that I needed him, 2 blocks from my house. And on top of that, he said, sure, I can, you know, I can cut the trees down, and I still have the truck, so I can haul them all away too. So it was amazing. You know, that was an amazing kiss on the cheek from God. That was supply, absolute supply. What I needed the instant that I needed it. So I called the neighbor, And I was nervous to call him because I remember he and Channon had had talked about the fence, a few years ago. So, but I hadn't met him. I hadn't met him. And I called him kind of expecting the worst, and was very apologetic and let him know that I had no idea that that was going on because they were behind the shed and I just didn't see him. But he could not have been nicer. Of course, he was surprised that the problem was going to be solved in a matter of minutes when Scott got there. And in fact, as soon as I hung up, Scott's already in my backyard. But he said he'd watch for Scott, that I could just send him over, and he'd walk back over if Scott needed to get stuff out of his yard, which he did, and he'd walk back over so that he and I could meet. And we had a really nice conversation, and he, I told him that Channon had passed at the end of December, and he was just very, very kind and compassionate. And so, all in all, it was like just the perfect storm of blessings. I met the neighbor, and now I know who he is, not just, from him, his conversation with Channon, which I was not a part of. Not that that was bad, not that that was bad, but it was, I don't know. It was like when I saw that note, I just kind of went into overdrive, like, oh my God, what do I have to do? How much is it going to cost? Blah, 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 blah. That associate of mine that just goes crazy, went crazy. And then it just all worked out in a matter of an hour. It was all done, gone, and peace. Peace reigned at that point. But it was just, I mean, it was just incredible, just incredible. And that's why I had to share it with you. And you may have read that story already, but maybe not. The second one is the second example is my brother and sister-in-law own the house that my mom lived in. And it's been on the market since December. They had a contract just a couple months after it was, or a month or so after it went on the market, but it fell through. The buyers didn't qualify, but as a result of the contract, before they knew they didn't qualify and wanted, wanted them to reduce the price a whole lot and, just convoluted, an inspection was done and the house needed some work that they were unaware of. So that was the blessing here. That was the blessing. That was addressed a couple months ago. And one of the things that they had to do was replace the roof, and then there were some other things, something to do with the furnace, or I don't really, something mechanical. Anyway, they got it done. They were able to get it done. But the house has just been like a thorn in my sister-in-law's side, because she thought it would sell right away, and she just wants to be rid of it. And I understand that. I understand it completely because really it's unfinished business. And they have a lot going on. She has a lot that she manages and takes care of because my brother is working all the time and traveling all the time. So, I understand it. But last week, it was just really sitting on my head. The fact that the house is still there, and I began to really feel anxious about it. But I'm pretty sure the majority of that anxiousness was her anxiousness, But also another reason that I was feeling a little anxious about it is because my mother's memorial will be when we have our family reunion at the end of the month on the 29th. We always meet. We meet every year. Last year was the first year that we hadn't met. My grandmother died in 2014. And last year was the first year we missed, and that's because mom couldn't be there. So her sisters in the mountains said, well, if Judy's not going to be here, we're not doing it. So, because it was her thing, she loved it. She absolutely loved it. And in fact, when she, the night that she died, we were all sitting around, and I read the letter that she'd left us for her, what she wanted. And she just said, I'm I have a cremation policy. My body's going to be cremated. I don't have, she says, I didn't include in there a service of any sort, and I don't care about that. But, if you want to do that, if you wanted to, how'd she put it? She goes, if you want to do a little memorial thingy, wait, that's fine with me. She had two songs that she wanted to have played, but that was it, and scatter my ashes. That's what she wanted. So we were sitting there talking about it, my brother and I, my aunt and uncle, in her living room, sitting there talking about it, having a glass of wine. And Garnet, my aunt said, your mom, those reunions that we had were really, really important to her. And she said that it's important to her that they keep going. And she basically assigned my aunt the responsibility to see to it, which I thought was kind of funny. But she said, why don't we do it then? Why don't we have a memorial then? A little, we can all just family sitting around talking about her, telling stories. And then we can go to the cabin. My mother has a cabin up there, a small cabin that she's had since my brother and I were teenagers. And we can just go to the cabin. It was a real special place for her. And scatter her ashes there after we have lunch. So it just sounds great. Well, that's going to be on the 29th. And my son and daughter-in-law and Quinn are coming, my granddaughter Quinn, are coming on the 27th and staying with me for a few days because now I have a guest room. However, the furniture for my guest room is coming from my mother's guest room. So, I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Where am I going to get a bed? And so if the house isn't sold, which is another reason it was just really sitting on my head, but the main reason was my sister-in-law and her anxiety over it. Anyway, as I'm thinking about where am I going to get a bed? I get this little tap on my shoulder, like almost literally a tap on my shoulder. Like, wait a minute. I have the bed frame, headboard, and footboard from my grandparents' bedroom set. I have the dresser, dressing table, and the chest of drawers that I've had in my bedroom for years. But we have a king size bed. So the bed that goes with that bedroom set is a double at best. Right? I don't think in the 1930s they made anything bigger than a double or a full size bed. So there was no way we were going to trade out our big comfy bed. And Grace and I feel the same now because she takes up half of that big king size bed and go with the double bed. But it's sitting there. And so it's in the garage. So I don't even have to go in the house. I just need somebody to help me load it up in my car. But I can just buy a really good mattress, and that's fine for a guest room. And then there are also at my mom's house, she has a fold-up bed, a roll-away bed, that is the other thing that I had intended to bring home for the guest room because Quinn's going to need a place to sleep. But that was like just bam, that's answered. So, I'm good. I'm good for that. But it was good to have a plan B, and the rest of the furniture for the guest room, I'll get when the house is sold. But even though I had that figured out last week, and that was maybe a week or so before that I realized I really do have a bed. Last week, it was just, I mean, really sitting on my head. Like I woke up thinking about, oh my gosh, that house isn't sold. What can I do? I'd done energy work. I'd cleared it energetically. I'd held the space for it to be, home, to be home and to draw to it its owners. And I did that and I held that space. So there was really nothing else I could do about it. Nothing. I could do nothing about it, but it was so heavy on my head. And finally, I just practice what I preach, right? And I just said to God, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get the house sold. I don't know. But this is a major distraction. So I just relinquish all power, control, and responsibility for it to you, to the God mind that meets every demand. That this was last week, probably, I don't know, Wednesday, Thursday, something like that. On Saturday, there's a group text from my sister-in-law saying they had two contracts and possibly a third coming in that would be negotiated and one finalized Monday, yesterday. Honestly, 2 days later. And that, it just happened within, I really do think it was 2 days of giving it all away. I know I was feeling her anxiousness. I know that wasn't mine because it was intense and I had to get rid of it. So that's it. I mean, that's like everything. Everything that comes up that I find myself trying to fix or figure out or maneuver or it's like now it's like give it away. Just give it away. Because I don't know. I don't know how to get rid of that house. I don't know how to ease my sister-in-law's pain. I don't know. I can't take that burden. That's hers. And rightfully so. I mean, it's not, it just is what it is. It's their house. It will sell. But, when you put a lot of emotion into something, when you really hate something that's going on, or need something to change. That is, that's the thing that binds you, as Goldsmith said. And whatever you bind with that emotion holds you captive until you set it free. And that was not my work. That's her work to do. And this is not anything I would ever even talk to her about, but you know what I mean? I mean, this is, that's her reaction, her deal. And no innocent victims here. They've owned that house for years. My mom rented it. Now they have to sell their rental. It's just interesting, but that emotion takes all the rationality out of it. Takes all the neutrality out of it and becomes consuming. And so, and that's kind of, well, that's what I was feeling. And that's what I had to just give away. And I could do it. I don't think she can until it's resolved, done, and closed. She can't. But anyway, and and I mean no judgment toward her whatsoever. I'm just looking at it from the place that when you don't know, you don't know. When you don't know, you have options, that you don't have to carry a burden like that. You don't know. It's how we operate, a method of operation in this physical plane. What do I want? How do I control it? How do I take care of it? It would be great if the house could close before the memorial, but if not, once it's under contract with a firm closing date, we can get everything out of there. And I'm certain my mom will be very happy when that happens, because I really know that I know that she wasn't attached to that house. She wasn't. And because it wasn't hers, she had a house before she moved in there. They bought the house so that she could be in this part of town where we all are, which was great. They could do that. But it wasn't her house. So I'm sure she will be very happy when it's all done. The last 6 months since my mom passed, all of her business, I think, has been settled. I know it has because I've taken care of it. The closing of the house, even though it didn't belong to her, and the memorial will bring closure for her and us. I talk to her all the time, so she's still here when she wants to be, and she always will be. Always will be. But, it's just incredible how things happen when we get out of the way. And that story is a perfect example of that. And, the moral of those two experiences for me is that surrender opens the door to supply. Because As Alan Watts says, you're giving away control. And in giving it away, you actually have it. As a person, you don't know, but the infinite self not only knows, but is the thing that you need. It's the thing that you need. It's everything. So not only do I don't know what I need, but the infinite self knows what I need and is that thing that I need. How perfect. How perfect. You know, it's wonderful. And it's a principle that has proven itself over and over and over to me. And that's why I share. I have to share it. I have to share it. You know, when you know something, when you learn something, when you have a gift, and I'm whatever it is, spiritually speaking, especially, when you know, I think it's we have a responsibility to share. When we have a gift or a talent or an ability, you know, just anything, not even aside from spiritual things, we have to share it. Because, you know, it's like use it or lose it, right? You have to share it. And when you share it, it expands. And when you hold on to it and don't share it, it dissipates. It dissipates. To him who hath, more shall be given. Anyway, another important, I want to move into a different area here that that's been very profound for me. Another important point of surrender is that it puts things into perspective. When I was concerned about furniture for the guest room, I realized that I really wouldn't need it for another month. You know, I looked at it. I was able to see it from there, from that neutral place. It's like, wait a minute, what are you getting all nuts over this for? You don't need it till the end of June. But when we want something to happen, we lose our perspective. We lose our neutrality. And we lose our ability to detach and just rest in our faith. This was an important realization for me, to just look at that thing. Yeah, I have to have a bed in my guest room because people are coming here to sleep. But it's not, it will happen. I need it then. So I give it away. And by the time I need it, I know I'll have it. Alan Watts told a story about an elderly woman who told him of how she had been trapped in an elevator and her leg had been broken. And she said she was waiting to be rescued. As she was waiting to be rescued, she realized that in all of life, there is not one grain of sand that's out of place. Now that's incredibly profound and worth pondering. And Alan Watts said, he says, you know, people who have had that realization really can't share that. You can't go out of there and share that with your family or with most people because they think you're nuts. They don't get it. Because of course we're here trying to live in this world, in this life that just keeps throwing experiences at us. Thinking we have to conquer them, or we have to change them, or do something about them. But I think we can only realize what she said, that everything is exactly how it is. It is what it is. There's nothing wrong. Everyone's in their own evolution, not higher, not lower. Just in their own evolution, and it is perfect because it's where they are. I think we can only realize that when we know our oneness with God, and therefore our oneness with everything that exists. Joel, my conscious oneness with God constitutes my oneness with all spiritual being, idea, and thing. I've been listening to one of my favorite videos of Alan Watts, watching and listening. And it's one of his TV shows called The Cosmic Drama. You can find it on the Be Here Now podcast, which is Ram Dass's podcast, or on YouTube. It's also on YouTube under the title, Alan Watts Breaks Down the Secret to Life in 28.1 Minutes.
I can't remember the name of the person that puts it up, but I get it. I got a big kick out of it, and I thought, oh, what's that about? And it's the cosmic drama. But in the lecture, this is the lecture in which he talks about the Hindu perspective of God as self, you know, the actor that gets lost in man and in the drama of life. And he says, and this is not verbatim, I'm just paraphrasing here. He says, we all know when we go to a movie or a play that it's not real. It's not real. But the actors will do their best to convince the audience that it is, so that the audience gets the most out of the performance, so that the audience can believe what's happening. So he says, imagine the very best actor in the world, namely God, playing to the very best audience in the world, namely God. I don't know, I get such a kick out of that. He said, imagine God being God. Everything perfect, you know, hanging out, everything's perfect, everything's in order, everything's beautiful. And after a while, God gets bored. And so begins to dream of all sorts of things. And the first dreams that he has are beautiful and heroic and wonderful love affairs and, you know, all the things that you want dreams to be or want real life to be. And then after a while, he gets bored with everything just being perfect, even in those dreams, and decides to have dreams where things aren't perfect, where there are challenges and pain and scary things. And then finally, God makes the choice to believe that the dream is real. And that's where we are right now. The word person is from the Greek word persona, which means mask. Every person that we see is the mask being worn by not just the greatest actor, but the only actor ever. The only doer, the only knower, the only creator, the only enjoyer. And we can catch a glimpse of the actor in the eyes of others. Alan Watts says, he goes, those beautiful jewels that we call eyes. He said, you know, it's interesting. It's hard to look another person in the eye, you know, to really look deeply into someone's eyes. And he was talking about that, and it's like, you know, that's true. That's true. I know that experience. It's kind of, I don't know what, I can't have word, I don't have words for it. But what he said is, you know, he says, I think sometimes we fear that they can really see us and see all our imperfections, so to speak, if someone looks into our eyes. So we don't like that. But he said, maybe the truth is, if they look into our eyes, they'll know who we are, and we'll know who they are, which is God. You know? So we can catch a glimpse of God in the eyes of others. And then we realize that we're seeing ourselves. And you know what? That's not just people, but animals. I love to look into Gracie's eyes, my dog. She just has these beautiful eyes. And it's a wonderful experience, you know, to just look into her eyes. And she's looking into mine. And of course I'm petting her, so she's captive audience when you're rubbing her shoulders or her ears. But it's a beautiful experience. And you know, I look into Gracie's eyes and I see God. Because God is, you know, God fills all space. There's nothing outside of God's grace. Knowing this, we can realize that we never end because we are God. We are life itself, life without end or opposite. And that helps us to see things differently. the biggest one, I personally speaking, the biggest one is death. To see it differently. You know, death doesn't end us. We cannot end. We're eternal beings. Death, we're just moving houses, you know? We're leaving the house that we've occupied for a while because it's fading away, or it's ill, or we just decide it's time to leave. You know, we just decide it's time to leave. But probably the most important thing is we begin to see life and the experiences that life brings differently, because we can see through them. We can see through them. We can understand that this is a dream. These things that we see, these experiences that happen, are not. They're definitely experiences, but they're temporal things. They're things that come into being and go out of being. So they are not, as Shankara says, they're not real. The only real is the eternal God, that is us. So, you know, instead of being affected by something that's happening, we can turn our focus inward and use the experience for our growth and our good. You know, realize that everything that happens is for us. It is useful if we use it. And if we use it, we are empowered. Now, the ego personality is a construct made up of our experiences, what we believe about ourselves, and the feedback that we've received from others. The ego wants to keep us safe and separate, and it does so by making the outside world and other people the enemy. You know, something to fear. But when we can see other people as ourselves, that changes. The ego loses its stronghold because we know it for what it is, just a mask, one of the coverings that is superimposed on God, as Shankara said. When we can see our ego in that light, we can see others in that light as well. And the result of that is a decrease in judgment and an increase in compassion. Because we're all just doing the same thing. We're all here doing the same thing. You know, believe in a dream. Believing that we are this persona, this mask, which we are not. Joel Goldsmith wrote, and I think this is just the perfect way to wrap this up. It was absolutely perfect. It showed up for me last night when I was reading. he wrote in The Heart of Mysticism, his letters to his students, as we recognize the Christhood of each other, we rest in a calm assurance that no one will harm us by any destructive or dishonest act, and in that resting, we meet all those who cross our path with tranquility and with the absolute conviction that we are safe and in good company. This will be true even when we meet with our particular Goliath, because we shall know that with all his seeming strength, a little pebble, one tiny little word, will be enough. Quote, I am, thou art. We are one in Christ. The Spirit of God is your life, your soul, and your being. That simple realization is our pebble. That is the only stone we need against any Goliath. I am, thou art, we are one. And I think that wraps up this segment perfectly. So I just want to thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you listening, however and whenever you do. You've been listening to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. We're here on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way that you listen to the world. Please stay tuned for Katie Weaver, and have a very, very blessed week.